Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's March 27, 2012, and this is episode 328. Last week, I picked up my new Canon EOS 5D Mark III digital SLR camera on the day of the launch, and I took some lenses, a fully charged battery, and a CF card with me to Shinjuku, so that I could start using the camera right away. A Starbucks lunch with a table gave me enough time and a place to set up the camera and take a quick run through the menus, making sure that I was shooting RAW, etc., and I was ready to go. Since then, I've been using the camera pretty much constantly, so today we're going to take a look at a lot of the new features, as well as taking a look at the high ISO capabilities. Let's jump right into it and start by looking at some of my real-world examples from that first day. I went to the Shinjuku Gyoen Park, where I knew the Kanzakura, a type of early flowering cherry blossoms, were in bloom. And this always attracts some birds, which would be a good test with the new autofocus, as well as high ISO capabilities, as it wasn't a particularly bright day. I'd been hoping for white eyes, a small green bird with a white eye, but when I got there, I found a flock of brown-eared bulbuls, and they were just pretty much all over the main Kanzakura tree there. So I set in to see how the 5D Mark III handled. I posted a couple of shots that we'll look at today, these first few, on my blog last week, so you may have already seen them, but let's take a look at these first few so that you can see how sharp the sensor is, and at high ISOs too. Note that even if you are listening to the enhanced version of this podcast with images included, you'll need to go to the blog to see the full detail in the images that we'll look at today, and ensure that you have your browser window nice and wide, and click on the images to view them at full size, or at least the full size that I posted them, so that you can really see the detail. You can jump to the blog post for this episode by typing mbp.ac/328 into your browser. First, here is one of my favourite shots from the day of the bulbul just taking off, with a couple of blossom petals falling. This is straight out of the camera, shot handheld with a 300mm f2.8 lens, and the 1.4x extender 3 fitted, and using ISO 400 for a thousandth of a second at f5.6. Note too that this was the second of only two shots that I was able to get as I saw the bird start to spread its wings. Had it not been for the faster frame rate of 6 frames per second, I'd have missed this shot. Here, though, is a 100% crop. If you're viewing this in the browser nice and wide, this is going to be a 100% crop showing just the bird's head and some of the blossoms. You can see that the focus is spot on, right over the head, the beak, and extending down to the eyes, which is exactly what I wanted. And the sharpness is amazing. Of course, that was always a given, but it's nice to see such great image quality. Just to be sure that you know what I mean by straight out of the camera here, for these first few images, I had downloaded the release candidate of Adobe Camera Raw 6.7, which has support for the 5D Mark III and the 1DX already. So basically, these photos do have the default settings for the latest Adobe Camera Raw applied, but I have not applied any noise reduction at all. Also, note that I cropped the full version of this image by about 3% across the top and the right side to clean up the right edge a bit, but that's all I did. I did try to use Digital Photo Professional, an image browser EX that comes with the camera, but that just confirmed my belief that Canon should stick to making great cameras. After confirming that Adobe's Bridge and Photoshop combined is only slightly less painful, I found that if I convert my RAW files to DNG using the Adobe Camera Raw 6.7 DNG converter, also still in release candidate as of March 27, 2012, I can then import my and edit my images in Lightroom 4, which was such a relief. Anyway, let's get back to my first day's photos. Although you probably know I shoot pretty much exclusively in manual exposure mode, I was moving from shooting the birds on the outside of the tree to going under the tree and shooting up at the birds, and there was much less light under the tree than on the top. This did, of course, mean that I had more backlight when under the tree, but I found it easier to deal with that with exposure compensation than a manual exposure adjustment. I know that this is very different to my shooting techniques so far, but I was also trying to get a feel for the new brain in this camera, and it worked out pretty well. For the last shot, I'd already started to try aperture priority, but I found myself constantly checking to ensure that I was getting a fast enough shutter speed to freeze the birds in motion. Although I like a bit of wing movement in my bird shots, these bulbuls move so fast that to keep even their heads sharp, I needed to keep my shutter speed at about a thousandth of a second. Because of that, though, I decided to also try shutter priority, setting the shutter speed to 1,000th of a second, but I also took another leap of faith at this point, which was auto ISO. Although some of my recent cameras have had auto ISO, I didn't feel comfortable using it because I otherwise shot in manual, and allowing the camera to make decisions about the exposure would have been taking the control out of my hands. Now though, with using aperture and shutter priority, I figured that I might as well take another leap of faith and give the camera maximum flexibility in exposure beyond changing the aperture or shutter speed, so I flicked the camera into auto ISO mode too. This resulted in this next image being shot at ISO 2000 with a shutter speed of 1,000th of a second at f4.5, and I have to tell you, I'm very impressed. Although I couldn't reproduce the high grain on my 1DS Mark III in my tests over the last few days, at least from my experience in the field, this image seems about as clean as ISO 400 on my 1DS Mark III, and probably comparable to around ISO 640-ish on my old 5D Mark II. And here's a 100% crop of the bird's face. You can see that I nailed the focus on the bird's eye again, and that was handheld at 420mm with an aperture of f4.5, so incredibly shallow depth of field. I used a mix of AI servo and one-shot autofocus, but because I was shooting under a tree with lots of branches everywhere, it was mostly one-shot on this day. But I've got to tell you, I really believe that the new autofocus system in the 5D is worth the cost of the upgrade by itself. Almost all of the 500 plus frames that I shot of these birds on this day were tack sharp, right where I wanted the focus to be. The hit ratio over the 5D Mark II is greatly improved, and it's even better so far compared to the 1D Mark IV, which was a huge improvement over the previous cameras at the time too. Before we move on, though, just to reiterate, this image was shot at ISO 2000, and just look at how clean it is. So, over the last few days, I've been testing the 5D Mark III in my studio to see just how high you can safely go with the ISO before you have to start worrying about the grain. I'll show you some example photos right after this, on the blog, of course, not here. All I'll do here is embed one image to show you the photo that I shot. You'll really need to go to the blog to see the examples. But to cut to the chase, I'm thinking that I can use this as high as ISO 12,800 without even thinking about noise at all. ISO 1600 is the new ISO 400, and ISO 6400 is the new ISO 800. Of course, this depends on what cameras you've been shooting with so far, but this is how I've all automatically just sort of mentally remapped the new ISO to image quality. With the 5D Mark II and the 1D Mark IV in low light, I would go down to ISO 1600 without worrying too much. Although I'd go further if necessary. My mental limit though was 1600. And I, you know, now with the 5D Mark III, that point where you think for a moment will probably be when I go past 12,800. When I really need to push it, I'll still go to 25,600, which is where Canon set the defaults for this camera. And depending on how I intend to use the image, I'd even go to 51,200 if necessary. If you want to, you can set the camera to allow you to select two expanded ISOs, H1 and H2. Which are the equivalent to 51,200 and 102,400. I think the point that Canon sets the defaults is spot on, because the image degrades quite a bit with these last two ISOs, but still, if you are really in a need for an extra stop, high ISO 51,200 is just about usable, especially if you're shooting for the web or printing relatively small. ISO 102,400 is probably to be avoided, but again, if a UFO lands on your lawn and they don't light everything up for you, then use it and try to clean the image up later in Lightroom. Okay, so let's look at some of the photos that I've shot through the entire ISO range. I'm going to assume that you're already with me on the website here, so if you're not, go to mbp.ac/328 and scroll down to the 12 thumbnails of the yellow flowers. So these 12 shots were shot in one-stop increments from ISO 50, also an expandable ISO, right the way up through to 102,400. These have been reduced to a height of 853 pixels for the web, but we'll look at some 100% crops in a moment. First, you know, this shows you that for web use, you really can tell no difference in the quality of the image until you reach the expanded ISO range. With the two images at 51,200 and 102,400 at the end, you can see a difference. Right up until that point, there's no difference for web use. Click on the thumbnails on the website to view the larger images, and then you can use the right or left arrow keys on your keyboard to move through the images, as well as clicking them, of course. I think you'll agree that that's pretty impressive. Let's take a look at 100% crop from these images, though, to see the grain up close, to see how it really looks. Again, in the web, in the enhanced podcast, I'm just going to embed the 51,200 ISO image for as a reference, but you'll need to go to the website to see the details. Having seen the web-sized images, though, and how good they look, These 100% crops probably show more grain than you might have hoped, but realistically, I think it's still pretty impressive, especially when you consider just how high these ISOs are. I think that you'll agree that 12,800 is almost a no-brainer. With 25,600 still really quite usable, and even 51,200 at a push is something that you could use. The 102,400, you'd have to be in, like I say, that's a UFO landing on your lawn sort of ISO, but still, it's worth keeping in mind that you could use it if you really needed to. So, as I said, although I know people have been using this for a while, I believe that this now makes auto ISO something that I myself will be using more moving forward. So I just wanted to note a few things with regards to the auto ISO settings as before we move on. You might be wondering how the camera makes a decision to increase the ISO over reducing shutter speed, but you'll be pleased to know that this is actually quite intelligent and you have some control over the decision too. Firstly, you're able to set the minimum shutter speed that the camera will go to before it starts to crank up the ISO. If you have the camera in manual mode where you set the aperture and shutter speed, auto ISO will adjust itself to put exposure where the camera thinks it should be with the exposure compensation carrot at zero. In aperture priority or shutter priority, you can use exposure compensation as well to increase or decrease the exposure. If you set the minimum shutter speed to auto, the camera cleverly uses the focal length of the lens fitted, including zoom lenses, as the minimum shutter speed. This is, of course, automating use of the popular rule of thumb regarding shutter speeds, which makes this really quite a useful setting. For example, when I have my 50mm lens fitted, shooting in low light, the camera will drop down to a 50th and sometimes a 40th of a second and increase the ISO rather than going slower until I hit the maximum ISO that I specified in the auto ISO range. Once I hit the maximum ISO, the shutter speed will start to drop below a 40th of a second as a last resort. When I use my 7200 lens though, the automatic minimum shutter speed increases to match the focal length that I'm shooting at. If you select something other than auto for your minimum shutter speed, the camera will start to crank the ISO higher when you reach that shutter speed. But again, once the ISO reaches the minimum set in the auto ISO range, it will start to increase the shutter speed past the minimum that you selected. In manual mode, using auto ISO means that you do, of course, lose control over the exposure. But if maintaining an absolute slowest shutter speed is more important than underexposed images, then it's still useful. You can set both your shutter speed and aperture and have auto ISO expose your shots to what the camera thinks the correct exposure is. But then if it gets too dark, you'll just get dark shots rather than slowing the shutter speeds down any further than what you've set it at. Okay, so let's start to take a look at some of the other changes. Although we gained a slight resolution boost, jumping from 21 megapixels to 22, apparently now there are no gaps between the micro lenses that sit above the photodiodes and larger 6.25 micrometer or micrometer pixels, which in turn means an improved signal-to-noise ratio, higher dynamic range, and of course, this is partly what's behind the incredible new ISO capabilities. Basically, the camera is gathering almost every bit of light that hits the sensor, which, along with the new DIGIC 5 Plus image processor, has resulted in better image quality in every way. I haven't had time to search around the web to see if anyone else is talking about this yet, but in general, I find that the quality of the images coming out of this camera are richer, deeper, and simply more pleasing to look at. I mentioned earlier as well that the new autofocus is deftly accurate, but let's take a little bit more of an in-depth look at what's changed there too. One of the only things that I was unhappy with with my old 5D Mark II was the autofocus system. My other cameras, the 1DS Mark III and the 1D Mark IV, both with 45-point AF, and especially the 1D Mark IV, had a much better AI servo system for tracking moving subjects like birds in flight. Spoiled by that somewhat, I was always disappointed with the 5D Mark II's ability to track birds in flight and didn't like having to select just one of eight other AF points when I moved away from the center point, but that's changed. Although I haven't shot birds in flight yet, from my tests on the first day, it's easy to see that the new 61-point AF system is worlds ahead of the 5D Mark II and even the 1D Mark IV with regards to accuracy. It just nailed the focus so much more than I've seen until now. I always felt that AI servo wasn't as accurate as one shot as well for focusing on even stationary objects, but having used AI servo for the relatively fast-moving bulba birds that I shot the other day in the tree, I found that even AI servo, as using it as kind of a pseudo one-shot with the back focusing button, was nailing the focus very sharply, as well as one-shot does. Also, low light focusing seems greatly improved. I haven't had an opportunity to really test this in the field, but just focusing in my studio towards the end of the day in light that would require around a two second shutter speed at ISO 100, both AI servo and OneShot seem to be focusing very well. It's snappy and accurate. You can see that I'll put another image up here, but you can see that Canon were serious about the autofocus on this camera because they actually gave autofocus a whole menu to itself. The AF menu starts off with six presets or cases for various types of subject, with tracking, varying tracking sensitivity, acceleration and deceleration tracking, and AF point auto switching sensitivity. All of the modes are based on a sport and may not immediately seem to apply to what you are shooting if you're not shooting sports, but I'm sure that as we use these systems, it will become easy to know which one to use for any given situation. I imagine, for example, that when shooting the eagles in Hokkaido that switch direction and speed very erratically, Case 5 for figure skaters might work well, or even case 6 for rhythm gymnasts. For birds in flight without so much erratic movement, maybe even case 4 for soccer and motorsports would work. I'm sure that someone's already posted this stuff on the web as well, but I haven't checked. Either way, I'll do some trial and error and tests myself and get a feel for each mode, and I think that that's what everybody needs to do. All of these cases, these presets, are customizable, by the way, so you aren't restricted to what Canon has provided us. In the other AF menu screens, you can do things like fine-tune how much priority the camera should give to obtaining accurate focus before you're able to release the shutter for the first frame, and you can set a different priority for the second frame and onwards in continuous shooting. Basically, this means that you can say to the camera, I'm not really worried about accurate focus for the first frame, just let me start shooting, but after that, slow down the frame rate if necessary to obtain better focus. Or conversely, you could say, don't let me start shooting until you have focus, but then shoot away regardless from the second frame onwards. There are three value sliders though, so the reality is that you'll probably choose somewhere in between and try to get the best of both worlds as you test to see what works for you. By the way, I set mine to prioritize focus for the first frame and then equal priority from the second frame onwards. I'll let you know how I get on with this later, especially if I start to make changes. Okay, so let's take a look at the AF area selection modes. And I've put a diagram on the blog. It's in the Enhanced podcast as well, but you'll probably need to go to the blog to see the details again. There are six AF area selection modes, including single point spot AF. And this is what I was using for the bulbul shots last week so that I could focus on the bird's eye even through small gaps in the cherry blossom petals. Single point AF is also just one AF point, but it doesn't have the little dot in the middle of the square that represents the spot AF in the last option that I mentioned. AF point expansion enables the four AF points above, below, left and right of the selected AF point to also become active. You can also expand this selection to include all eight AF points surrounding the selected point. Zone AF is where a block of focus points are selected and can be moved around nine different zones using all of the 61 AF points. And finally, there's 61 point automatic selection AF, which is where you'd basically just leave the selection of AF pointed, it's a selection of the AF points entirely up to the system. Another nice touch, and something that I've had on my one series bodies for a while now, is the orientation linked AF points. You can now select an autofocus mode and a manually selected AF point for each orientation. So if you have one mode and a particular AF point selected with the camera in landscape mode, and then you tilt the camera up into portrait mode and select a different AF point mode and even select a different AF point, the camera will remember the difference and toggle between the two sets of settings as you change the camera's orientation. Unfortunately, even with such a vastly improved autofocus system, and despite the fact that it's been ported almost exactly as is from the 1DX, the 5D Mark II will not allow autofocus at f8, which means you can't use a 2x extender on the f4 super telephoto lenses or any combination of lens and extender that takes your lens's widest aperture to f8. This was always possible in previous 1 series bodies, but even the 1DX might not have this when it finally hits the streets, which has the birding community up in arms. I've heard that this is because the physical sensors in the 1DX and the 5D Mark III systems are only rated down to 5.6, so there may be a physical restriction. People tape the connectors on the back of the lenses and the extenders, and also use a certain brand of teleconverter that don't relay the aperture information to the camera to overcome this. And it seems to work. The autofocus does seem to work on most occasions. I've also heard that Canon are talking about making a firmware change to allow you to turn on f8 autofocus on the 1DX. Albeit a little slower than 5.6 or f5.6 autofocus. And if they do that, it would be nice to see this change made for the 5D Mark III too. As it is right now, I've confirmed that my 600mm f4 lens does not have autofocus with the 2x extender fitted. And before we move on from the autofocus system, I wanted to briefly mention that the 5D Mark III also incorporates dual layer 63 zone IFCL, or Intelligent Focus Color Luminance Metering. Basically, the system takes color and luminosity readings from around the selected point focus points to increase metering accuracy. Of course, luminance has always been part of it, but now it's using not only the immediate area around the selected focus point, but it's also using color information, which should make the metering system more accurate. A lot has been redesigned in the 5D Mark III, and one of the things that people at Canon said that they put a lot of time and effort into was actually the sound of the shutter mechanism. I wasn't surprised to hear that, because I'd heard the shutter during the launch event and found it very pleasing. Let me shoot a few frames here and show you what I mean. Also, there's a silent mode that slows down the frame rate, but does make the shutter mechanism really quiet. If you find yourself in a situation where that's important, it's a useful thing to have. Here's how it sounds. I'll play you those again back to back so that you can get a good comparison. Both of these were recorded with the camera about 15 centimeters from the mic, so you can tell that the silent mode is much quieter. Both sound great, but I really like the standard shutter sound myself. I think it's the best sounding shutter mechanism of any Canon camera so far. Great work here. The camera itself actually now feels much better to handle as well. It was never a bad camera line, you know, the 5D line, but the grip now feels much more substantial, and the addition of the M-FN or multifunction button aids operation greatly. In fact, there's a new custom controls menu that we see in the image that I've got up right now, from which you can customize not only the multifunction menu button, but many of the buttons on the camera. For example, as you can see in this image, I have set my camera so that the new electronic level is displayed in the viewfinder when I press the multifunction button, located just above and to the left of the shutter button. This is also where you can remove the autofocus from the shutter button. So now my shutter button only releases, it only meters and then of course releases the shutter. To focus, I press the AF on button on the back of the camera. There is also now a live view and a movie start stop button to the right of the viewfinder, which will be easier to use when shooting movies, but I haven't yet had a chance to shoot any video. Other new buttons include a quick control button just above the quick control dial to the left for easy access to the camera controls on the LCD. The quick control dial is also now touch sensitive when shooting movies, so that you don't hear the clicking sound of the dial if you change settings while you're shooting. I found myself instinctively using the new rate button or rating button to give stars to a few of the better images from my shoot last week. And although I didn't check this myself, I believe these star ratings are universal and available in Lightroom and Bridge, etc. There's also a new multifunction lock switch, which can be programmed to lock the quick control dial, the multi-controller, and the main dial individually or none at all, which will be useful if you sometimes catch these dials while shooting. I'm also pleased to see that there's now a button in the center of the mode dial so that you can stop yourself from accidentally switching between shooting modes such as aperture priority and manual, etc. With my old 5D Mark II, especially when using the Black Rapid straps, the camera would rub against my leg and change the dial quite often, which used to drive me crazy. One change that I'm having a really hard time getting used to is that Canon decided to take the preview image magnification away from the buttons on the top right on the back of the body. Pretty much every time I go to look at an image that I've shot, I hit the AF point selection button to zoom in and nothing happens. There's now a dedicated button in the middle of the five buttons that run along the left side of the back, and it was really easy to just hit that AF point selection button before, and it's become muscle memory for most people, I'm sure, so it would have been nice to have left that alone. Note though that you can, and I did, change the custom controls so that the set button in the middle of the quick release dial displays the image preview and zooms in as well. You can also set a custom function to zoom to a predetermined magnification or remember the amount of magnification that you last used, which is nice. We also now have 100% to almost 100% field of view in the viewfinder, which is great, and it really helps to keep the edges of the frame clean when shooting with the viewfinder. The new intelligent viewfinder with superimposed LCD also allows for lots of information to be displayed right there in the viewfinder. I really like, for example, how the focus points and grid illuminate in low light or just show up as black lines and squares when it's light enough to be able to see them. Also, the viewfinder flashes when you achieve focus when it's dark, so there's no ambiguity there. What you see in the viewfinder is fully customizable too. You can turn the grid on or off, and how the focus points are displayed is fully customizable as well. I can't imagine anyone not being able to find a way that really suits their shooting style, including just turning it all off if necessary. And because it's all customizable quickly, you can change it for any particular type of shooting too. One other feature that I was looking forward to is multiple exposure. I used to have this on my old Canon SLR film camera, and Nikon users have had this for a while, but now we have it on the 5D Mark III, and the 1DX will have multiple exposure too. And I had a lot of fun playing with this over the last few days. This shot that I've got in the Enhanced podcast and on the blog right now is a two-frame multiple exposure. For the first frame, I went to f2.8 and focused on the color lily to send the background elements way out of focus. Then for the second shot, I stopped down to f11 to bring the background into focus, and I used dark comparative control mode, which basically gives preference to darker tones over lighter ones. All of the modes are useful, and you can create a nice painterly feel quite easily with a bit of experimentation. I really was like a kid in a candy store playing with this feature over the last few days, but I soon learned that it's also pretty easy to overdo it. For example, you can shoot your first image totally out of focus and then overlay one that's nice and sharp. And at first it looks quite nice, and there are applications here, but the more you look at the resulting images, they can look like badly done HDR images. So care is needed here. Also, you can, of course, do shots of moving subjects, shooting more than two frames, up to nine, I believe, and have them appear at multiple times, multiple points in the frame, which is fun. The cool thing about this, too, is that unlike with the old film cameras, you actually get an overlay on your LCD that you can line up with, you know, your new shots, so that you, as you overlay them, it makes it quite easy to get good results. The most time-consuming part for me was getting used to the different modes, like, you know, the others are additive, average, bright and dark. But the creative options are huge with this. And like I say, it's a lot of fun. I guess I should have spent more time testing HDR mode, but at the moment I just don't do that much HDR, and so it fell by the wayside as I tried to find out as much as I could about the 5D Mark III over the last 4 days as I prepared for this review. I did do a few handheld shots with the natural mode selected, and they looked incredibly good. As I try this in the field, I'll report back with my findings, but I'm sure that there'll be plenty of others covering this in their reviews soon anyway. Apart from not getting used to the repositioned zoom button yet, the only other thing that I found awkward, especially while shooting the birds on my first day with the camera, is the lack of vertical shooting controls. And of course, these will come with the battery grip BGE11 that is scheduled for release towards the end of April. I didn't think that I'd miss that grip so much, but I'm really looking forward to that release. With Lightroom 4 now having GPS support as well, I'm really looking forward to the new GPS receiver, GPE2, that fits into the Flash shoe. And that will also work with the 1DX when I get that, so it saves me having to buy two dedicated GPS units for the 1D, and you know, a second one for the 1DX. These units record the direction that the camera is pointing when you take a photo as well, which is going to be useful. Well, following that review, it's probably a foregone conclusion, but I have to finish by saying that I give the Canon EOS 5D Mark III a huge thumbs up. You might think that I want to give this camera a good review because I've just spent $3,500 on it, but really, I'd tell you if I didn't like it, and honestly, it has far exceeded my expectations. I was really looking forward to the new autofocus, the ISO capabilities, and the multiple exposure. I have 10 frames per second on my 1D Mark IV, but it's still nice to be able to shoot higher resolution images at 6 frames per second too. It's not lightning fast, but it was enough to get some tricky action shots with the bulbuls, and I'm looking forward to really giving the AI servo focusing a run for its money too. I know there's been a lot of fuss about the raised prices for the 5D Mark III, but I tell you, from what I've seen, there's easily that amount of R&D gone into this camera, and I don't regret paying the extra and picking up my copy of this great new addition to the Canon lineup. The new ISO capabilities and autofocus open up doors to us in the Canon camp, and as I say, the images seem to have a depth and richness that I was not expecting, and I'm looking forward to hearing what others think about this. I hope it's not just me and coming from my infatuation with my new baby. Before we finish today, firstly, I'd like to mention that I'll be on anything up to 8 of the Aurora Expedition's amazing photography adventures from June to December this year. I had mentioned this on a number of podcasts that I've been on lately, but I don't think I mentioned it here. Basically, though, I've made a deal with Aurora Expeditions putting me on up to 8 voyages as resident photographer. We'll be visiting Antarctica and South Georgia, the European Arctic, including Spitsbergen, Iceland and Greenland, and the Russian coast, including Kamchatka and the Kuril Islands, Franz Josef Land and Novaya Zemlya. And it's going to be an amazing, whichever you decided to join on, it would be a totally amazing photographic experience. Information on these amazing photographic adventures is on my mbpworkshops.com website, and links to full details of each voyage on Aurora Expeditions website. Note too that if you decide to join me on any of these, I need you to use the MBP booking form that you'll find on my website, or ensure that you enter the name Martin Bailey where it says how did you hear about us. If you use the Aurora Expeditions booking form, that is. Also, ensure that you check the photography activity option. Without signing up for the photography option, you won't have access to any of my lectures on board or be able to spend any time with me in the field. So that's an important one. Also, I've recently joined forces with Stitcher Smart Radio to enable you to listen to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast using Stitcher on your iPhone, Android phone, and Kindle Fire, as well as in GM and Ford cars that support Stitcher Radio. I've put a graphic tile on the sidebar on the blog and the podcasts page if you need the app, but if you already use Stitcher, just search for Martin Bailey Photography and you'll be hooked up in seconds. So, a bit of a long one today, but thanks very much for listening. Remember that you can find me on Google Plus and Twitter, etc. All links are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.